believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443. Welcome to the show, everyone. Again, republicbroadcasting.org. You can always pick us up and listen. By the way, I just wanted to let you know, I had a couple of listeners get a hold of me and let me know that with when they use AOL, they've been having a little bit of trouble with the stream. If you have AOL on, but rather than trying to listen through that, if you open up Internet Explorer, evidently the stream clears right up. I got that through some listener email over the last few days. So the show number here, 800-313-9443, if you'd like to call in and participate. Again, if you'd like to get some generic RBN business cards, it's $8 for 100. That includes shipping and a free bumper sticker. Order those by calling 800-724-2719, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, weekdays. All right. A lot of concern over ammunition and whatnot. So I have a little bit of a story to read to you here. Regarding that, concern that the Obama administration could impose a new ban on some semi-automatic weapons is driving worried gun owners to stockpile ammunition and cartridge reloading components at such a rate that the manufacturers can't meet demand. Attorney General Eric Holder, in my opinion a parasite, last month suggested that the Obama administration favors reinstituting the U.S. ban on the sale of assault weapons. President Bill Clinton first signed such a ban into law in 94, generally blocking some military-style guns with magazines that hold many cartridges. President George Bush had allowed the ban to expire, as if it was the president's idea to allow it to expire. It was a legislative deal. Congress allowed it to expire. We have heard from all across the country that there's a tremendous shortage of ammunition, said Lawrence Keene, senior vice president of the National Sports Shooting Foundation. We've heard this from the manufacturers, that their customers are calling them trying to get supplies for inventory, and that the manufacturers are going full bore, pardon the pun. The Newton, Connecticut-based foundation, is a trade organization representing firearms and ammunition manufacturers, as well as retail gun shops. Semi-automatic rifles are selling at an incredibly brisk pace. Right? Adding that many manufacturers of semi-automatic rifles and pistols are already so backed ordered that this year's entire production is already spoken for. He said the current ammunition shortage followed the increase in gun sales. While the current shortage includes cartridges for popular semi-automatic rifles and pistols, we are covered by the Clinton era that were covered by the Clinton era weapons ban. It also extends to other common varieties, including common revolver cartridges and 22 rimfire cartridges used for hunting and target shooting. I got to tell you, the ammo shortage is a real live issue. Luckily enough for me, I stocked up on ammo years ago. I've got plenty, if you can have plenty. Where I'm having trouble is I'm having trouble finding reloading components. Specifically, primers is what I look for. I have a bunch of everything else. But, yeah, it's very, very difficult out there to get anything. People are stockpiling, whether by necessity or whether by desire, and I think it's kind of a rolling effect. This guy, and this guy are stockpiling. So you know what? Maybe I should do it too. So even though in this really tough economy, people are buying the guns that they otherwise think that they might lose, and they're stockpiling the ammunition to shoot through it. All right. Probably not a bad idea. However, right now, realize it's like September 11th p.m. 2001, where some gas stations were charging $5 and $6 a gallon. It's a supply and demand through the retailer, so just keep that in mind. All right. Thanks for joining. We'll be back after these words.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has received a flurry of criticism for acknowledging that the United States, or at least some of the people in the United States, bear some form of responsibility for the explosion of the drug-related violence in Mexico that, since the beginning of 2007, has left more than 7,000 Mexicans dead in this violence. The trouble that she doesn't seem to be prepared to follow up with her comments to anything close to their logical implications. Here's something she said. "Clearly, what we've been doing has not worked," Mrs. Clinton told reporters on her plane at the start of a two-day visit to Mexico. "Our insatiable demand for illegal drugs fuels the drug trade. Our inability to prevent weapons from being smuggled across the border to arm these criminals causes the deaths of police, of soldiers, and civilians." She added that, quote, "neither interdiction nor reducing demand have been successful." Interdiction of drugs. Nor reducing demand have been successful. Nice. Now, Hillary is only partially correct. It isn't our insatiable demand, but a small subset of the population that fuels the drug trade. And it fuels it to the tune of $15 to $25 billion a year for Mexico. And while Mexican drug gangs, they do smuggle some guns from the U.S. gun stores. I don't even know if there's so much from the stores, but some come from the U.S. down south, as do all kinds of other things. Really, the majority of these guns, as we reported on this show, are coming from the southern border and in from the ports, not from the U.S., as the administration is trying to get you to believe. All right? Here's some of the arsenal of the Mexican drug gangs: seagoing submersibles, helicopters, modern transportation aviation, fully automatic weapons, rocket-propelled grenades, 66-millimeter anti-tank rockets, mines, explosive booby traps, heavy machine guns, 50-caliber sniper rifles, and massive amounts of handheld grenades, and the more modern 40-millimeter grenade machine guns. Of all of those, the only thing that you could buy at a gun store in America is a 50-caliber sniper rifle, like the 50-caliber Barrett, which is used in extreme long-range shooting. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. It's as verbose as these people come across about what different gun capabilities are. I heard one recently where they said a 50-caliber sniper rifle can reach out as far as 1 mile. Well, that's not exactly true. It actually can go out to about a mile and a half. It's not 1 mile. As a matter of fact, if you really want to push the extremes of it, you could actually hit out towards about 2 miles. So stick that in your little information cap there, Libs, because a 50 caliber sniper rifle can definitely go further than a mile. Now, clearly, these weapons are not coming from a few rogue gun shops along the U.S. border with Mexico. With the vast profits and prohibition, they make it possible for Mexican drug gangs to spend their vast resources of drug money to get guns in from anywhere. And they're not going to get semi-automatic SKSs and Mini-14s and AR-15s. They're going to get fully automatic guns from other sources, not the U.S. A lot of them, folks, are from the Mexican military, which, when people leave, their guns come up missing. Why? These folks leave the Army. What do they know how to do? They know how to do Army stuff. They know how to do military training, and they know how to shoot. So they go to work for these cartels. And a lot of them bring their guns with them. So, trying to stem the flow of guns from the U.S., which is minimal at best, into Mexico, first of all, is not an issue of the United States. It's an issue of Mexico. If Mexico wants to stem the flow of arms into Mexico, they need to secure their northern border, their southern border, and their ports. That's a Mexican issue, not an American issue. And I am not going to give up a single damn one of my rights for any other country, because I don't have a say in the other country. The United States shouldn't have a say in any other country when it comes to their internal policy. Mexico has a democracy of sorts. I mean, everybody for the most part, it might sound bad to say it, but here's the truth, folks. I'm not going to try to pull wool over anybody's eyes for any reason. Mexico is corrupt, as is a majority of the third world. Yes, Mexico is a third world nation, and it is corrupt from head to toe. Now, the current president is trying to rid that country of corruption. However, things get worse before they get better. And you're talking about many, many generations of Mexicans that have lived within this corrupt society. They don't know anything else. It would be relearning how to exist. And that's going to take a lot of time. From the time that the Democrats decided that they're going to start instituting a whole new plan to get generations of people, starting at the school level, into more of a liberal form of thinking, it took us from 1961, really, when JFK took the office, to 2008 when we elected Barack Obama, who is as leftist, Marxist, socialist as could possibly be. On the Dave Champion Show here on RBN, again, that's 3 o'clock Central Time for those of you who don't know, we reported on that show, Dave did, and I reiterated it once when I sat in as a guest host for him, that the administration, the folks that helped get John F. Kennedy in office, came up with a plan to start essentially getting everyone along the lines of their thoughts when it came to children in grade school, up through high school, through college, and then to indoctrinate their kids and then their kids, until finally everybody is so left-leaning that we can get whoever the hell they want in there. The Socialist Party stopped running presidential candidates. This is what we reported. Stopped running presidential candidates because they realized that the Democratic Party had enveloped all of the Socialist Party platform. They no longer needed to run a candidate. So that's what we've got. With that being said, we have a few clips of Hillary Clinton. And she is in an interview with Greta Van Susteren, and they're both just spouting off all of this anti-gun administrative rhetoric. Listen to this.
The guns that are sold in the United States, which are illegal in Mexico, get smuggled and shipped across our border and arm these terrible drug-dealing criminals so that they can outgun these poor police officers along the border and elsewhere in Mexico.
Total lies. Absolute total lies. What Hillary Clinton is trying to come across with is that 90 to 95% of the guns in the hands of the Mexican drug cartels are smuggled into Mexico from the United States and are being used to further their drug empire. Now, we have absolutely no proof of that, with the exception of all the photographs of all the guns that they are taking and submitting to us, the majority of which are guns we can't even access in the United States. So just those photographs counteract what Hillary Clinton is saying. Continuing.
Well, the issue with the weapons, some people have thought, you know, is that sort of a hidden agenda, like a gun control? I'll tell you one thing, that we looked into it. We talked to some ATF sources, and they are hardly, you know, the liberal wing of the Democratic Party.
In fact, the ATF is the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. The ATF is the only federal agency I know of that has federal agents that carry guns that are anti-gun for the United States, for the people, as a whole, as a group. They don't much care for folks having guns. A friend of mine was at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Georgia, and he was wearing an NRA shirt after hours, went out to grab some food, have a couple of beers with a couple of guys he's taking a class with, and the ATF guys were in there wearing their ATF polos. And when they saw my buddy with his NRA shirt, after talking with him, and then they noticed, this mood went sour. So I got to tell you, I have no problem saying that the ATF doesn't want any of us to have guns. So for Greta Van Susteren to say that they spoke with ATF people and they're not part of the Democratic left-wing anti-gunners, that's an absolute lie. Continuing.
The ATF has told us these weapons, these automatic weapons that go right through these police officers here, are coming from the United States.
Yeah. Automatic weapons? Where are you going to go buy a fully automatic gun? The ATF says that. First of all, I doubt they did, because the head of the ATF says, you know, quite honestly, we have no confirmation because the Mexican government won't give us a single serial number on any of these guns.
You know, Greta, I remember 15 years ago, the reason the assault weapons ban was passed is because police chiefs in America begged for it. They said, I'm sending my guys out onto the street. They're being outgunned. The criminals, the gang members, they have automatic weapons, military assault rifles.
Okay, listen to this BS again.
The criminals, the gang members, they have automatic weapons, military assault rifles.
Right. The criminals have it. Now, Hillary Clinton is trying to say that the criminals out there got their guns in some legal form and had an outright assault on police across this country. That's what she's trying to imply, which is total bull. Absolute total bull. If anything out there was full auto that these criminals had, it was already illegal. Passing more laws isn't going to do anything. Enforcing the laws is going to do something. You know where it starts? With the judges putting prisoners, putting people who are convicted away behind bars and keeping them locked up. Had a judge done that in California, and had there been any air of responsibility with a parole board in California, four good, solid men that carried the badge and protected the streets of Oakland would be alive today, not having been gunned down a week ago Saturday. It starts with the judicial system. We'll be back.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So we all know that Hillary Clinton has absolutely no friends in the Second Amendment world, and here is her attempt to try to convince gun owners that banning guns in this country is a good thing. Listen to this.
If you're the strongest pro-gun person in America, you have to stop and ask yourself, okay, we want those guns in our country, but another country just across our border has different laws. So why should we be the source of their problems? If we want to have them in our country, fine. That's for us to decide. But the Mexican police and people have decided they don't want them in their country, and we're facilitating by our inability to stop the illegal sale and smuggling of these guns.
Yeah, they didn't want them in their country 41 years ago in 1968, Mrs. Clinton, but yet they all have them, and they're not coming from the United States. So, Hillary Clinton got spanked just a little bit. Here's a little story for you. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is now the second member of President Obama's cabinet to get shot down by the White House over the politically sensitive issue of assault weapons. After meeting with Mexican President Felipe Calderon, Clinton said that the reinstating of the U.S. ban on assault weapons, which was passed in 1994 and expired in 2004, is one step this country could take to curb the flow of guns to Mexico's drug cartel. These military-style weapons don't belong on anybody's street, she told NPC. Within hours, the White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs told reporters that he was unaware of any plans to push for such a ban, even though Obama had backed one during last year's campaign. Pinhead Attorney General Eric Holder said had a similar experience a few weeks earlier when he endorsed a ban at a February 25th press conference. Justice officials were instructed by White House aides to drop the issue, according to administration and congressional aides, who asked not to be named due to political sensitivities. What's behind the shift? A budding relationship between the gun lobby and Democratic leaders on Capitol Hill. After Holder mentioned the ban, the NRA sent out action alerts to its members and bombarded Hill offices with calls. 65 House Democrats dashed off a letter to Eric Holder opposing such a ban, while Speaker Nancy Pelosi, echoing the NRA's mantra on all gun control issues, said she backed, quote, enforcing the laws we have now, end quote. Imagine that. One of the biggest anti-gunners out there actually repeated the words of pro-gunners in Nancy Pelosi. We're actually getting somewhere, folks. NRA Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre told Newsweek that Hill Democrats have learned their lesson from 1994 when they enacted the ban and subsequently lost control of Congress. They've also learned that cozying up to the NRA can pay big dividends. Last year, Democrats received 20% of the nearly $1.2 million that the NRA pumped into congressional campaign coffers, more than twice what it gave Democrats just 6 years earlier. The way things are going, this could be more than just a shotgun wedding, folks. All right. Continuing on, out of Helena, Montana, this is by the Associated Press. It says two Democrats could be the best allies for gun advocates. Two Montana Democrats are leading the charge against gun control, even helping force the military to continue selling surplus brass to gun aficionados who want cheaper ammunition. U.S. Senators Max Baucus and John Tester are not simply placating gun advocates with a vague promise to vote against gun control in Congress. They are forcing former political foes to recognize that Democrats could be their strongest allies with the party controls in Washington, D.C., while the party controls Washington, D.C., pardon me. This creating uncertain bedfellows on the issue that wins or loses races in places like Montana. The pair have been taking the lead on issues that only the most ardent gun rights advocates were talking about in the past. Just last week, they joined Republican Representative Denny Rehberg of Montana to press the Defense Department to move that it's credited for overturning the short-lived ban on selling brass back out to the market. All right? So we're doing good things, folks. It's working out. Now, how about this? Congressional leaders are going to meet with some of the industry executives this week. The National Sports Shooting Foundation is taking to Capitol Hill this week. They're talking to Capitol Hill, sponsoring a congressional fly-in for senior industry executives. Now, this is good news. The 30-plus member delegation will speak with key congressional leaders on legislative issues important to the shooting industry, such as a federal excise tax reform, removing anti-competitive export controls that harm U.S. manufacturers, and support for keeping firearms tracing data secure within the law enforcement community, such as the Tyhart Amendment, and not having that overturned. Increasing funding for the Don't Lie for the Other Guy anti-straw purchasing campaign in support for protecting today's modern semi-automatic sporting rifles. Now, this is going on this week. This is actually good news. However, we cannot let down our guard. Because more than once, we have been bamboozled, folks. We have had other folks within Capitol Hill promise one thing, start to do another, look towards one thing, and then look away. When that gun ban went through in 94, it was exactly split down the middle in the House. And at the very last moment, a turncoat switched his vote, and it was 316 to 314? Is that what the vote was when it was 315 to 315? The last second, that one guy caused it. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth. Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
President Barack Obama has said that the government will send a few more Border Patrol agents to the 2,000-mile border with Mexico, set up inspection of vehicles going both ways across the border, and send another $66 million to the Mexican government. Good luck with that. $66 million to the Mexican government for what? So that they can actually man the inspection stations going into Mexico? When has any country ever stopped? I'm sorry, let me rephrase this. When is any other non-communist bloc country stopped vehicles to inspect what's leaving the country, with the exception of the communist bloc. Who's ever done that in a free society? Hey, come and go as you please. You're part of this country. Now, we might make sure you're not bringing contraband in, but we're not going to see if there's stuff going out. That's up to the country that you're going into. Could you imagine if, say, you want to get on a plane and you're going to fly to Europe, maybe you're going to go to Italy for some vacation or whatnot, and you have to go through inspection before you leave the country, U.S. inspection before you can leave the country, as opposed to going through, when you land in Italy, going through the inspection there when you're coming into the country. Yeah, that's crazy to me. But thanks for basically just pissing away another $66 million, President Barack Obama, to a corrupt nation. Wonderful. Thank you. All right. Now, this gun control thing must not, the Mexican violence must not affect the gun control or the lack thereof, the gun policy within the United States. All right? Let me read you a little tidbit here. It's as if the feds finally woke up and said, hey, we have ourselves a violence problem on the southern border with Mexico. For years, border states have been begging for federal government help in the form of money, equipment, and boots on the ground to help secure the border and prevent violence from spilling over into the U.S. However, the government has been somewhat less than helpful. But along with the change in administration has come a new focus on border violence, as though they could ignore it. President Obama is going to visit Mexico sometime next month with a number of high-level cabinet members that he's going to take with him. Hundreds of new agents and a slew of surveillance equipment will be sent to parts of the 2,000-mile border. Some of those agents will be used as anti-gun trafficking agents. That's probably going to be the ATF. This is where some care really must be taken, all right? While it's good to have more agents trying to interdict the southward flow of weapons into Mexico, the knee-jerk response of tightening gun control must be avoided in this country. Instituting more inspections on the U.S. side of vehicles going into Mexico, okay, that's a reasonable idea as long as it's within the hands of Mexico, in my opinion. We catch the guns and the money before they get south of the border into the hands of the drug cartels. Now, that's the big thing. If you really want to stem this, you stop the money flow going across. All right? Mexican drug cartels, they get all these drugs together. They have them humped into the United States. If we could stop them there, great. That's even better. Now, if we could stop them there and we could stop the money going back into Mexico, they cannot be financed. They can't afford to continue their operations. Nobody can, except the U.S. government. If they run low on money, they just have the Fed print up more of it. What the hell? Continuing. What must not happen is having the violence in Mexico dictate the imposition of draconian gun control measures in the United States. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, an avowed foe of gun ownership, has suggested resurrecting a ban on certain semiotic weapons. The 1994 ban was over in 10 years. Obviously, in 04, it expired. And Obama has indicated some interest in ratcheting up restriction on guns. Fortunately, Holder and his ilk can't seem to arouse much interest in Congress in dredging up another gun ban. That's good, because legitimate gun owners shouldn't be penalized for Mexico's inability to control its own affairs or the U.S. federal government's inability to stem north-to-south smuggling of drugs, guns, money, whatever it might be. Get off your butts and do the smart enforcement. I got to tell you one thing that, you know, I'll get to that. Let me finish this. I'll get to that in a second. Simply because it's important and unable to curb internal violence, the Mexican government should not be allowed to effectively dictate American policy and thus attack the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. There's nothing wrong with increasing efforts on the side of the border to interdict the southward flow of contraband. There's everything wrong with having Mexican violence used as a reason for instituting more gun control in the U.S. That is a problem. All right. Enough of U.S. and Mexico for now. I harp on that all the time because, folks, that seems to be what's likely to be the one thing that they will use out of the administration to try and take away gun rights, our gun rights, is that allegedly Mexican violence is perpetuated by these guns. That's not it. You cannot have people operating in any capacity without funding. All right? If the funding for these drugs gets taken away, if we intercept all that money, wouldn't that be great? They say it's $15 to $25 billion a year. If we have $15 to $25 billion a year that we can seize, then going across the border back into Mexico, those folks don't have any money to continue on with their illegal drug operations. All right. We have a caller on line one, Charles from the great state of Texas. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hi. I would just wanted to comment on, you said, what if they inspect us as we're leaving to fly to Europe? Well, they already do that. You know, you come around the corner as you're getting on the airplane, and they ask you how much money you're doing, and they look in your bags if they want to, and depending on your answer, and then they'll stop you right there. And that's what at the border down there, I cross it pretty often, and that's what, you know, they talk about building a fence. Well, that fence is to keep us in. That most of that money went to, they put these booths in there now, so whenever you leave the country, you have to have a card to get out of the country. And, you know, eventually they want everybody to have that chip in their passport. That's what that's for, so they know when you're coming and going.
You know what, Charles, you're right. You make a very good point. It's all about, thanks for the call, it's all about what they want to have control over. And it's essentially U.S. funds. You're right. My daughter actually, one of my daughters lives back and forth between the United States and Germany, where her mother lives now. And, they ask about how much money you're taking out of the country. Now, they don't seem to be looking for folks who are trying to do this, who are successfully doing this illegally, backpacking, you know, huge sums of American cash back across the Mexican border. They're more looking for the citizens that are going across and asking them about their different questions. And you're right about the fence. It is more of a keeping in than a keeping out. If we wanted to keep people out, we would have put this fence up long, long ago. The reason to keep people in is a change in attitude, change in administration, change in what's going on in Washington, D.C. So thank you, Charles. Very good points. Appreciate it.
Are you still there? I could make one more point.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I think that we should not focus so much on the illegal aliens as being such a big problem. Yeah, it's a problem, but that's like 1%. It's like a smokescreen. It's like the AIG bonuses whenever it's the Federal Reserve that's the main, 100% or 99.9% of the problem. So, you know, they're just dividing us by talking about illegal aliens being the problem.
Well, what do you think is the problem then, Charles?
Well, the welfare system is what, get rid of the welfare, then you don't have the problem. I mean, the public schools and the welfare and the health system that's subsidized.
So what you're saying is don't provide an avenue or don't provide a system for illegals or anyone else to come into the United States so that they can embed themselves in non-work and government assistance. Is that what you're saying? Don't provide that sort of a haven for them?
Yes. I mean, that seems to be the focus, what everybody worries about. I mean, that's why they're worried about the illegal aliens, because they're taking our whatever. You know, I
don't couldn't
see
agree
where
with you
problem.
More. I don't think I could possibly agree with you more, Charles. Thank you for the call. Yeah, that's I couldn't agree more that if we provide a haven and an avenue for folks to come into this country or just folks that are already here, that they can essentially do absolutely nothing and get free housing and free money off of the American taxpayer, then it probably wouldn't be so attractive across here in the United States. A lot of folks look for work when they come into this country. A lot of folks who are already here don't, because it's a free ride. All right. I want to read a little something to you that might be somewhat shocking. However, if you think about it, in the eyes of the founding fathers, it's absolutely right. And the only reason it would be shocking now is because the political heat has been turned up as though you would boil a frog. And let me give you that interpretation. If you boil if you boil up some water, you got a hot boiling pot of water, you throw a frog in there, he's going to jump right out. However, if you put a frog in cool water and very slowly turn up the heat, he'll boil to death. And that's really what's been going on in this country politically. If we turn the clock back 20, 25, 30 years around, say, the Reagan administration, and we saw what was going on in the country now, who we had in on the Hill, who we had in the White House, who we had as the Attorney General, who we had as the Secretary of State, and what's gone on that whole time, we would look at it and say, there is no way, absolutely no way. So it's been incremental. So listen to this. The full meaning of citizen authority over officials in every generation must not be repealed, but revealed to the American people, the true sovereign in America. It was declared that we are the sovereign in America and that our sovereignty be backed by lethal force always. It was declared that we have the monopoly on force, from handing just powers of government bodies to citizens' oversight of police and military to the citizen arrest. The people delegate what we wish, but reserve all authority ourselves. The Second Amendment was written to be impervious to due process such as political sway or a majority short of another amendment. And the truth of this is given testimony by the very bold act of moving for its repeal. So what does that tell us, folks? That tells us that absolute authority lies with we the people, us citizens. We give, we elect folks into positions of authority. I should say into positions of handling our governmental business, our national affairs. We reserve all of that authority. They, and elected officials, as they, answer to us. Now, when was the last time we demanded that the government answer to us? It's the other way around. We're answering to the government now. We're answering to them. They call up and say, hey, we want to know, da-da-da. Oh, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, whatever it is. Now, that's wrong. That is turning this whole thing in a 180-degree way, and we're putting the cart before the horse. The master is now listening to the servant. The servant are the executive, I'm sorry, are the elected officials. The servant is the entire government, be it municipal, county, state, federal, or otherwise. They are the servants. We are the masters. How do we reserve that right as a master? If all else fails, how do we reserve that right? We reserve that right through armed conflict, which is how this country came about. When we had excessive taxation, when we had no legitimate representation, we went to war. We went to the streets, a citizen war against the British Empire, and we kicked their asses. And now we're the United States of America. We are now experiencing the same form of government that we came up against and rose above in the late 1700s. Now, why do I mention this? Well, we have excessive taxation. We have folks that are doing what they want, not representing we, the constituents. They're going off what big business or special interest is trying to get them to do, which is not the way this country was founded. This country was founded on principles that are better than that, because the old way under British rule was corrupted. Now, you've heard some politicians talk about wanting to excessively tax certain aspects of our society. They already do it with tobacco. Now, I'm not a smoker. I'm not a big smoker. I enjoy an occasional cigar when I'm out with friends. That's great. But I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't much care for cigarettes. I don't like the smell. I don't like anything to do with them. However, I'm not going to tell you that you can't smoke. Unless, of course, you're in my house. With that exception, it's your right to go out and smoke. Should you have to pay $4 a pack in tax for what's otherwise a 35-cent product? The answer is no. That is part of the attitude that got us into a war with the British for the War of Independence. They're looking to tax ammunition or guns at 400-500%. Remember the issue with Black Talon bullets back in the early 1990s? They wanted to levy a 5,000% tax just on those rounds. Is that legal? No, it's not legal. But what happens is Capitol Hill, those folks can pass it. The executive branch can enforce it until after years the judicial branch says, oh, you can't do that anymore. And then the executive branch still would have to listen to the judicial branch. Doesn't mean that they necessarily will. All right? So I warn you folks in legislative positions not to repeat history and do things such as overtax and overburden we the people. Because, like it or not, and scoff if you will at the moment, but we do actually hold ultimate authority. And it's backed by loaded guns. That's why, that is exactly why, we need and deserve the right to have things such as AR-15s, AK-47s, SKSs. That's why. It's so that if you guys get out of control, we have a way to respond. That you'll listen to. All right. More after the break. Thank you for staying tuned.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, as a kind of a counter to the pinheadedness coming out of Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder, Kansas to vote on gun ownership amendment at the state level. Listen to this. Next year, the folks who live in Kansas will be able to vote whether to change the state constitution to guarantee individual gun rights. It's the law of the land today in every state. They, the supporters, would like you to make it sure that it says it stays that way in Kansas, said Senate Majority Leader Derek Schmidt of Independence, Kansas. Supporters of a resolution that has passed the House and Senate say the move is needed in case the U.S. Supreme Court ever decides that the Second Amendment doesn't protect individual gun ownership. In 2008, the court ruled that the Bill of Rights covered an individual's right to own firearms. Before that Supreme Court decision, some lower courts had ruled that the intent of the Second Amendment was to tie the right of gun possession to militia services, such as a state National Guard unit, rather than an individual right to own a gun. Scott Mogul, spokesman for the Freedom States Alliance, called the fear that the courts or the current presidential administration might take away from people a phantom issue, and said lawmakers would have been better off focusing on more pressing issues. The alliance works with grassroots organizations across the country to prevent gun violence. Now, in 1905, Kansas Supreme Court decision said that gun ownership is a collective, not an individual right. The proposed amendment would give the right to each and every person. Therefore, under the 10th Amendment of state sovereignty, even on the federal level, if the Supreme Court came out, because they're the only ones that can do this, because I don't ever foresee the Second Amendment getting voted on state by state and having a two-thirds majority to have it go away. Not going to happen. But if the Supreme Court were to get more liberal judges in there and take away our right to own guns and reinterpret it as they've done, they've reinterpreted things as the wind blows, this right here in Kansas would assure everybody's rights at the state level under the 10th Amendment of state sovereignty that everybody gets to hold a gun regardless of the federal regulation. So, how about that? I would encourage you to get a hold of your state representatives and get a copy of this online from Kansas and encourage them to introduce and pass similar legislation in all 50 states. That would absolutely cause the feds to be completely useless. It would cause them to be useless. In addition, I believe, under the 10th Amendment, from my interpretation of this, and I'm not an attorney or a judge, thank God, that they could also regulate state by state what you can and cannot have, regardless of what the federal system says. If there's a federal ban on a specific type of gun, I believe the states can override it. Interesting. Okay. Well, hopefully it's been an informative show for you folks. It was a lot of fun. By the way, the Florida applications for concealed weapons permits are up 90,000 applicants over normal. How about that? Thanks for staying with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. You can email me, bill@2aradio.com, with any comments. Thanks, folks.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.